IMRO's 2023 Best Local or Regional News Programme. The Voice of the Northwest, the 9 till noon show with Greg Hughes.
And you're very welcome back to the programme. Good morning if you're just after joining us. We have Seamus Gunn from joining us to answer your legal questions. That's coming up for you shortly after the break. But I want to catch up on some of the comments that we didn't get to in the first hour. I can count the number of times that I've been nearly knocked down on a zebra crossing because the cars won't stop. When you be in the middle of the road, they just drive on. Hi, Greg. The terrible human genocide in Palestine should be categorised as Israelis, Palestinian children's Holocaust and put the genocide on a par with what took place during World War II, which it really is, says Raymond. Wrong, Greg. Count how many are going. Count the cost. Where are they going? No accountability. Red Sea crisis shall really put up the COL. Col? I don't know what that is. Kenyan safaris, no thanks, not out of my pocket, says Oshin. The minister is jetting off to the USA. Don't even think of representing us, the people of Ireland. They're strained at the leash to get away and enjoy themselves. If they thought anything about the people they represent, their time would be better spent at home trying to help house our ever-increasing homeless people instead of acting like spoiled brats. That comes in from Anne. Great to hear today a panel talking sensitively about real issues, or sensibly. I suppose that's another caller says that. I mean, there are other ways we could do it. I mean, you know, like, is anyone going to Birmingham, London, Glasgow, you know, Edinburgh, places where people come here to visit and spend, I suppose? I don't know. Maybe they are. There is a map showing where people are going. What about the people in black on scooters and no lights? What's the law for them? Well, there's no law in as such. Scooters, they shouldn't be on scooters. Really, that is the law. But when we talk about high vis for non-car users, I mean, you know, you can throw scooters in there as well. Where are all these jobs from all the St. Patrick's Day junkets? The ministers and RTE would be all agog boasting and bragging of them if there were any, yet they never say a word afterwards. Well, I mean, the argument is this country, for right or wrong, and it all depends on what job you're in. It is in full employment. We have full employment here. Anyone that wants to work has a job. Statistically, now, there's going to be people listening that say, I'm looking for work and I can't find it. But statistically, the country is at full employment. Greg asked, when does the ordinary man in the street see the benefits of ministers going all over the world? Social welfare recipients got double allowance this week because our economy could afford it, because our surplus generated mainly by foreign investment. The marketing of Ireland abroad played a part in this. Okay, well, you see, at least then maybe you've articulated a potential benefit of these trips. So that's important, that's good. When we have the Prime Minister of the North and South meeting together, both members of the same united non-sectarian Republican Party, both representing the majority of voters on both sides of the artificial sectarian constructed border, then of course we'll be steering nearer to United Ireland. Is it like a trinity, a synergy, where two parts together as a whole united together are more powerful than both parts together, or apart perhaps? It will take a time for unionists to accept, but as we can see, they are not supporting the tens of thousands protesting it, nor the loyalists, covertly British-supported death squads killing Catholics. Ireland, North and South have moved on thanks to the peace process. Our children are leaving the country because they want to not. Our kids are leaving the country because they want to, not because they have to. It's for the lifestyle, the weather, the adventure, etc. There's always a movement of people for the reasons that you've outlined, but that's not, the majority aren't leaving for those reasons, it would seem, because they say otherwise. Morning, it's a disgrace that these ministers, and I say that lightly, are running to these countries for Paddy's Day. Do me a favour, it's nothing to do with anything for our people. It's a jaunt for them, pure and simple. Ask them to do it on their own time and money and see the answer that you get. Morning, who's at those bottle banks are a waste of space and money. Very few people we know will use them. Put them in school playgrounds for children, not taking up space in our overrun shopping car parks. Greg, it's a sad situation when your panel have no topic unless to legalise drugs. Have they forgotten about the thousands of children and innocent people being killed and starved by Israel and their supporters? And the best highlighted can do is to highlight a campaign for it to make it easier to get drugs, drive cars and kill more people. In fairness, the topics, we go to them one after the other. I think that text came in before we moved on to the St. Patrick's Day parade and the Israeli concert. Not St. Patrick's Day trips in the Israeli context. So, but it's not up to the panel to dictate the order. That's just the way I went through them. Hi, Greg. See, four more ramps popped up yesterday. on back roads into Letterkenny is because Donegal County Council don't have the brains to see that traffic has to take these roads to try to get to their work on time. Great news for the tidy towns, Greg. Bring back your bottles and cans, says a listener there. Just three more before we take a break. Mary Lou is talking of United Ireland. This will take at least 10 years. It will take many years to get Northern Ireland's priorities in order. The government will never work together. We don't need a United Ireland. We don't need Ulster. Well, we're in Ulster here. I presume you mean the six counties. The small shops can participate in the recycling scheme very easily. You get the return bags, you keep them and fill them up. The recycling companies then come to pick them up. Well, it's not that easy because we spoke to two smaller shop owners yesterday. And that is, then you have to talk about storage and all that kind of stuff. Retailers aren't able to buy cans or bottles in Northern Ireland. They need to be stamped to be eligible for the scheme, indeed. But listen, you see, around the place, shops that spit up multi-packs and sell them, you're not supposed to do that either. Just a bit of news that we're expecting a little later on this morning. I have been told that Pope Francis is going to announce that the bishop for this part of the world, Bishop Alan McGuckian, is moving on. And is going to be appointed as Bishop of Down and Connor. I've been able to get no more further information on that in terms of who might replace him, but I think that will be a bit of a shock to a lot of people out there. But as I say, if we can get any further confirmation as to who might replace him and an official line on that, we will later on in the morning. But it's kind of significant news, I think. Right, last one just before the break. Several times a week, by day and night, rally cars are blocking the R254 road near the bridle path in Glenveagh National Park to race their cars up and down the hill. It's a disgrace. No wonder there's a problem with speeding cars in Donegal. This is a special area of conservation. The guards cannot be everywhere. What are the park rangers and local councillors doing to stop this? Now, I hadn't heard of this before. But cars blocking the R254 and rallying up the bridle path in Glenveagh National Park. Any more information on that? To 086 60 25,000. Okay, we are going to get your questions to Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn and Co. Remelton and Letterkenny now. Good morning to you, Seamus. You're muted, my friend. So if you don't mind,
good morning,
Greg. Good stuff. I'm doing good, Seamus. We've been really busy this morning, but I just want to talk to you about something really that a lot of people are talking about. And it's like any new legislation, and we're seeing it in the north, for an example, with the with changes being made to the Windsor Agreement and what have you. But it's when laws are being introduced and how they might be interpreted or not, or what they might mean or not. And I think the one that's vexing a lot of people, and there's a lot of conversation out there, is the new hate crime bill. Minister McAtee intends progressing the Criminal Justice Incitement to Violence or Hatred and Hate Offences Bill early in the new year this year. The first two bills have now passed all stages in the OCTUS, and the Policing, Security and Community Safety Bill will be at committee stage in the Shannon this week and is expected to pass all stages by the Christmas recess. Now, that's an old piece of data that I'm reading to you there. But what is your reading of this legislation?
Well, it's not entirely new, Greg. We've had it in the statute book since, I think, 1989. When there was the Incitement to Hatred Act that was introduced then. And it is now, well, during the intervening period, it became fairly obvious, and it has been stated, I think, by some of the politicians, that it's not really fit for purpose in the current, you know, digital media world that we live in. So obviously, with the developments in that, there's this new bill, the 2022 bill, which is moving its way quite quickly through the House of the Oireachtas, to such an extent that it's now actually in the Senate, and it's in the final stages, I think, of the committee stage. So, and then there, I suppose, there was the more attention brought to it in the light of the riots in the end of November in Dublin. And only yesterday I see that there's two people actually charged for the first time in relation to those. So there was a big intensity and energy put into actually trying to put this on the statute books before Christmas. And I think, thankfully, that has been stalled a little bit. I think knee-jerk legislation always gives rise to trouble down the line and challenges us. Obviously, the Council of Civil Liberties, have a big say in this as well as to how this is going to affect free speech you know, in general, and in with for the public, which is everybody's entitlement. Mm-hmm. And so that has exercised, as you've mentioned, lots of people's minds, because with the introduction of there's certain pieces of this legislation that would cause disquiet. I'm referencing one in particular, actually, which is that in relation to Gardaí and making investigations into a potential incitement to hatred offence as to their powers. Now there's one section in particular which I think that the Senate are really going to have to look at. It's where a warrant can be obtained by the Gardaí to carry out a search in one's house and to seize basically any type of equipment that might be there, including phones, any computers, even hard copies of writings, books, etc., that are in your actual possession that could maybe be interpreted to give rise to an incitement to hatred.
Now, that's been labelled fairly
draconian, because
I want to talk to you a bit.
Once you have it in your possession, you can actually you could be charged and fined, and that's now I think really has to be addressed, because the further powers than that, in that they can actually compel you to access your computer, use your password, etc., to get into it, to carry out this type of investigation. That would bring serious disquiet. I think that the area has to be certainly addressed. As it was in 1989, nearly impossible to prove an offence, because you have to prove an intent on the part of the party broadcasting it or saying it or spreading it.
Yeah, and this is what's kind of got the international attention. Grown men wetting themselves that Elon Musk is taking an interest in this, and others as well. The so-called thought crime. So, in other words, I could have something on my phone, have never distributed it, okay, but it could be offensive to one of the characteristics: race, colour, nationality, religion, national or ethnic origin, descent, gender, including gender expression or identity, sex characteristics, sexual orientation, and disability. So the concern is that I could have something on my private phone with a stated intention never to distribute that, but could find myself foul of this hate bill. Is that in the same space as you've just been referencing there?
Absolutely. That's covered. There is a particular section on that that deals with that, that even you do not communicated, but that you do have it in your possession, and you haven't either communicated yet, or if you know of intention of communicating it. There's a particular section of that, in fact, actually covers that, and that runs on into the problem I would have in relation to the particular powers that are being given to the Gardaí to investigate it. And then, though, of course, it will certainly be up to the DPP to decide. But as it was impossible. If somebody said, "Well, I didn't mean to spread any hatred, or I didn't mean to incite violence," and that worked as a defence in the past. Now it's this aspect of having it or possession. For example, if you get a text or a WhatsApp or whatever, or X from some of these social media sites, and there is some content on it, and there's an awful lot of that out there at the moment, as we all know, and it arrives on your phone or whatever. Well, as it is phrased at the moment, that could give rise to you being involved in a prosecution for having that there, because it could be interpreted as incitement to hatred.
And I would have to prove
This is important. The test seems to be, now it seems, because it hasn't, it's not, a, this is not a, an act that has been implemented yet. There will be a lot more debate. But the test now seems to be recklessness. If you're reckless, so if you receive this content, if you look at it, you should probably delete it. That's maybe the thinking behind it. Is that going too far with regard to free speech? They're saying that the characteristics that you have referenced there, they're not stating that if you have a view on them that you can't express it. Now that has also been stated in a particular section of the Act. You still have the right of freedom of expression, and you have the right to have an offensive view of something like that. You have the right to debate it, but you don't have the right to incite hatred against somebody who holds those characteristics. Let's just say
it was based on race, okay? And currently at the moment, people would refer to people of colour oftenly coming in here that it's a plantation, that in port, you know, and I don't wish to offend anyone, okay, but sometimes you have to use the common used phraseology to get to the crux of the question. You know, import the third world, become the third world. You'll see that all over social media in Britain and Ireland. Now, that is inciting hatred because you could argue, because you're effectively stating that a group of individuals from a part of the world that are most likely of a different race are coming in here and making this a third world. Is that incitement to hatred? Because you could say that, you know, I'll go, well, I'm getting angry about that because they could come in and women aren't safe and children aren't safe. Like, will this law be used to discourage or eliminate that type of commentary?
Well, if it did, is it going too far? It's going to come down to the testing of what I mentioned there as to how reckless this is. If they're expressing a view in relation to the characteristic, you're saying nationality there, and they have a view on it, well, in that case, in the essence of free speech, they should be and are allowed to state that as a view. But if that view is such that it's saying, oh, we have to stand up and do X, Y, and Z as a result of this, well, then I think that thin line, you know, you may be just crossing it at that point. Now, that I'm not Solomon and I can't set
the
judgment.
No, I understand that.
But it's going to be, that is where it's going to have to be teased out.
Yeah, but,
and that's
but
where it becomes quite practical,
but,
because
okay,
to get to that stage and to bring that through the courts, at some point, a DPP is going to have to take a view as to whether it goes across that line and therefore should be prosecuted or does it not. So it's going to be a balancing act. But as it is at the moment, that any of these crimes, or if they it would come before the court until the new law is implemented, are going to be under the 1989 Act. And under the 1989 legislation, if you said, well, I didn't even know I had that content. I didn't mean it. I didn't mean it to be in any way offensive and had no intention of it being so. That acts as a defence as it stands at the moment.
Okay.
Now, that is far too loose.
But just a question, Seamus. At the moment, there's a number of people before the courts. One is charged with the following offence. It is alleged that on a given date, at a place unknown within the state, you distributed, showed, or played a recording of visual images or sounds to stir up hatred. Right, so, and I know the videos in question because I've seen these videos, right? And that was effectively along the lines of what I was saying a little earlier on, but perhaps in somewhat stronger language. So if people are already before the courts for inciting, violence or hatred, what is this new law's purpose then? Because we've focused an awful lot on that already in this conversation, but there's people already before the courts and we do have laws that already seem to cover that.
They do cover it, but I think, though, if we go back just to what I'm saying in relation to, regardless of what the cases are before the courts, what lines of defence are open to them at present,
okay,
under the act that you are now referencing, because that would be the relevant act for which they're being prosecuted. Under that legislation, you basically have to prove intent to incite hatred. Now, they say, look, I don't believe that I never had any such intention. That was a view that I have myself. I'm not trying to stir up anything. Well, in that situation, that could be seen to be saying, well, if they don't have intent, then the charge could fail. I'm, as I say, not in a position to adjudicate upon that, but that is open to them in relation to broadcasting, in relation to stating it or passing it on in social media. Now, what they're saying is, under the new legislation proposed, is that if that is reckless to such an extent that it could be interpreted, well, look, if you read it, that's what it's saying. It's basically stirring up people to do something, calling them to arms, if you want to put it just in plain language. Well, if it goes that far, well, then on the face of it, there's not the same standard of proof to show intent. It's said it could be interpreted as that, and therefore that is the offence, and That's what they are legislating for. So they're broadening it. And I do agree that it's not fit for purpose. And I don't actually believe with this content anyway going around in social media in any event. It is not, it's not good for society in general. And it's marginalizing people. And that's not a way of dealing with the issues
of course
that
you're referencing. Of course not, Seamus, but there are major conversations going on at the moment in relation to transgenderism, for an example, in terms of immigration, just two issues, right, where people can have really, really strong feelings, not necessarily with hate, but, you know, there's a lot of stuff is flung in all directions in that. The concern is that who draws the line that you've crossed here? There is a distrust that the state or the courts will get that line right, that people will feel that they can't express views that aren't based in hatred, but just an absolute disagreement with the direction of traffic. You know, do you think, as is, this will lead to people feeling that they can't openly debate things for fear of actually committing a criminal offence?
I would hope that it would make them maybe stop and think of what the consequences could be of that type of language that's being referenced, and that there may be at least a little bit more guarded in that and consider, well, how could this offend people? Could this be considered as an incitement to hatred? I'm not for one minute saying that you can't have an offensive view or make people feel uncomfortable. That's your constitutional right, as it were, your freedom to speech, and that is protected, and it is actually protected specifically in the current proposed legislation. So you can make you can have a very offensive view about any of those issues that you're saying. You can be able to say that that's my view on it, you know, and so be it. But if that goes as far as saying, well, within any logical interpretation of that, could be seen to be inciting other people to hold that view, that would incite hatred against a particular sector. Well, in that situation, I think that gives rise to potential of a prosecution. Mm. But now on that as well, if this is going to be brought in, it's going to have to be only just one leg of a much more holistic approach to the whole situation that we're dealing with. I think the powers that be have to have a form of legislation in place. Can they implement it? Can they enforce it? Is the actual manpower there? You know, all of those are practical points.
Yeah, but you take
seriously looked at to bring prosecutions and bring them before.
Yeah, but the way that works, Seamus, is say, for instance, in relation to the, and this is a random analogy, but say in relation to the riding a quad bike without a helmet, right? You don't have to do everyone that's riding a quad bike without a helmet, but you go into an area and you do one person. And then you go into another area and you do another person. And in relation to this, what you might do is those that oppose immigration or transgenderism or whatever it is, you take cases against the people that are seen as figureheads of a particular movement or what have you. And that's how you cover it within, in terms of resources and what have you. Like, are you fully confident that this hate bill can't be interpreted or exploited so a government, whichever government that might be, can actually really police what people can and can't say? Because the language being used by government now, for an example, and ministers, is very similar to language that was being used by a year or 2 years ago by people ringing shows like this, and they were being deemed racist and anti-immigrant, for an example. Like, I think the public might have a concern that this won't do exactly what it says in the tin, that it will be used as a means to control the narrative, in inverted commas.
Well, dealing with your quad point just in passing.
Okay. That was about 10 minutes ago, but go
on. The helmet and not using it on the quad bike. Well, the power that is responsible for the enforcement of that is the Health and Safety Authority.
I know, but they only have to go in and do one person in an area.
That I thought nearly impossible to police. So, but in relation to the more serious issue, will it not do what it says on the tin? I think that it has to be there and should be there as a deterrent. I think it's going to have to be seriously looked at in relation to some of the sections that I have highlighted, in particular the powers to go into one home, seize one's computers, etc., phones and that, on the basis of a warrant or on the basis of a suspicion. And then if you have that, if you have content on those, you could be in difficulty. I think that that's problematic. But what this does is it highlights the situation. It should make people think twice. I don't believe that there is, I just don't believe, and it's just only my own view, that there is a place for the type of social media stuff that's going around at present in relation to any issues that are held so-called dearly to people's hearts. If there is protest about, and not people aren't happy with government or aren't happy with a particular direction, whether dealing with migration or otherwise, the place to be protesting is really in outside Dáil Éireann and a proper legal lawful protest. If you look at what happened back in November, the end of November, that the riot, that's where we're looking at in relation to this type of legislation, that somebody has to say, stop, this social media is going too far. It's going too far to the right, and it's potentially inciting hatred and marginalising smaller groups in society. And I don't think there's any place for that. I think a deterrent has to be put
there. I get you. And I suppose what's offensive and not is quite subjective. And some might say, well, who's policing the far left? You know, there was a case in Britain, and we'll go to a break and then get to questions. There was a case in Britain concluded this week, where one person was called a racist, and they retorted by calling another person a paedophile. And they were found that them using the word paedophile, it did libel the other parties, but the judge didn't make a determination on whether or not the person was damaged by being called a racist. You know, when people will look at that and go, right, well, you're sort of siding with the left over the right there, and you know, that could be problematic.
Well, I think that is very problematic, because I think that you have to apply the law fairly and equally and impartially, which is very important. So I think that there's a big question mark on that one.
OK, we're in the company of Seamus Gunn from McLaughlin Gunn and Co. remotely in Letterkenny. And Seamus, I think it's fascinating and I really appreciate debating these things, isn't it? Because, I mean, obviously you're coming from a position of authority with your background and your experience, and you're well versed in arguing the twos and throes of laws and what have you. But sometimes I think it's a little bit absent, in that people will see a law passed, and in relation to this, I think it was passed in the Dáil by something like 111 votes to 14 votes or what have you. And often we, the public, kind of don't feel we have any influence or say over it, and it's kind of been done. Like, I think there's a lot of space, I think, for debates on big issues like this, and I think they're very welcome, Seamus. What do you think?
Yeah, I think good debate and variety. And I think it's very important that communication is right, and that it will bring people on board and listen maybe objectively to what the arguments are. I think that when you reference it going through the Dáil, we do live in a democracy, but it's a question, do we use our democracy? Do we use it properly? Mm-hmm. As you've stated there, at this point, I'm saying that there's now an energy behind the debate in the Senate, which is interesting, which didn't happen in the Dáil at all. But if we were using our democracy properly, we would be knocking on the door of our TD saying, oh, wait a minute, what about this new piece of legislation? I'm not happy with X, Y, and Z, and get the debate going that way, rather than it actually being hijacked potentially by a particular sector who has an agenda. And then you get a different type of debate coming on the airways, which may or may not be balanced. Yeah. So objectivity is very important, and communication and proper open debate, where people can voice their reservations. And if they're offensive, where they can voice them, even if they are offensive. That's what a free society is. That's what civil liberties are. And that's what free speech is. But if we use our democracy properly, we would be knocking on the door, and it wouldn't be the Senate that would be left now juggling this around. If they had got it moving after November, it probably would be on the statute books by now. So it was very nearly there, and there's a lot of tweaking to be done to it, I'd say.
All right, brilliant stuff. Thanks, Seamus, as always. A couple who separated for 2 years, the husband's still paying the mortgage, but he's not actually living in the house. They've got two children together. Should he be paying the full mortgage?
Well, look, we can't really adjudicate for these type of issues that arise, but What I would say is that the party who has the value of the property and who is enjoying the comforts of it certainly has a responsibility in relation to discharging the mortgage on it. There can always be other circumstances that you have to take into consideration, which are quite relevant, and particularly here the reference of the two children and what their needs are and what the requirements are, and in practical terms, what the budget is between the people. If matters break down and they head along to the family law courts, which it could happen, then orders would be put in place as to the situation with a view to going forward and the responsibilities that each party would have with regard to a mortgage. From the financial institution's point of view, they probably don't mind one way or the other once it's paid.
Yeah, this is a question that comes in regularly. I'm not sure it's from the same person or it's a particular problem, but we'll just get it answered now, I suppose. Could you find out why it's taking so long for a court case? I'm waiting since 2018, taking a garage to court over a car I bought from them. My solicitor says they're just waiting on a court date. Why might it be taking so long? Thanks in advance.
Yeah, well, look, they should really be asking their legal representatives that. We have come through a period of 3 years, really, where there has been a serious backlogs in the court systems in relation to civil matters, which this is. And we are all well versed up in this part of the world as to the waiting lists in relation to actions that are pending before various different courts, in particular maybe the ones even locally. So that there's nearly 3 years that you have to that is kind of in some way parked in relation to that. This is a civil claim. It could have now a list number. The parties could check it out with the appropriate court services, whichever court it is in, to see where it is on that particular list. For example, there's special sittings of civil cases coming up in this jurisdiction in the coming months, and there is two or three times a year that. So they're working through basically a backlog. If there's any particular pertinent points, they should address them to their legal representatives. If it's set down for trial and awaiting a date, I'm afraid that is just the consequences of we've lost out in 3 years. That'd be my view on it. Yeah. Of course, they can go in and seek priority if necessary, and that's again up to their legal advisors.
I suspect maybe their legal advisors are giving them the same answer as you are, and it's not satisfactory to them because they want to see it moved on. But it is what it is.
We have to try to be just objective and explain the current scenario that we're living in.
These questions, I don't know how easy they are to answer or not, but maybe they just want a ballpark. How much would it cost to transfer a house from a parent to a son? Is there a rough estimate? Would it cost an awful lot? Just a simple transfer, they say. Now, as I say, every case is different.
Look, I never hedge questions if I can help it at all.
Yeah.
But questions that are relevant to costs are a matter between the two parties involved. If you're retained as a lawyer, if you're consulted as a medic, or you consult or need your mechanic or engineer or plumber or whatever, electrician, it's up to the individual to agree costs with the party providing the service. Solicitors are highly regulated with regard to legal services, and there's an obligation to issue what's called Section 150 letters, whenever they're taken on a case, let people know the parameters of how the costs are involved. In relation to this particular individual, the question, it's referenced to a transfer to a member of the family. The big issue that could arise here, and the main outlay, which I would suggest, is that of stamp duty. Nothing to do with the solicitors at all. It's the government to get it. And you can knock on their door on that. But in relation to the stamp duty, a house, it comes down to the value of it. And there would be then a 1%, there could be a 1% stamp duty applying on that. Of course, there could be consanguinity relief, but that's going to be a big item of outlay. If they want an idea of what their professional fees are, they should have a consultation with them and have it agreed in advance and move forward from there.
And I think
that's the reasonable approach. And you should, everybody's entitled to be paid a reasonable fee for their services.
Yeah, but I think too we kind of have to be realistic as well in that, it's just a simple transfer. But it's what might seem simple to us, or what we believe to is, it starts getting, it's not simple, because there's an awful lot of hoops.
Potentially, first of all, the biggest deal in which the individual, the normal person, such maybe as myself, would be involved in their lifetime with regard to valuation. If it's a dwelling or of two, maybe a value of 100 or 200,000, it's not every day you're dealing with that type of value and the value of what it means to the person who's getting it. You could have issues arising. You could have mapping issues arising, for example, to be sure that's the right title and that it corresponds with everything on the ground. Might need a survey. There could be easements. There could be access issues. There could be rights of way. You know, there could be services. So
the roof could be 600 mil higher than the plans.
We can expand it out. So if you're going to say, like, how much will that just cost? It's not just a simple, it's just a simple transfer. There is a little bit more involved, and that's why you're best leaving it to those who are trained to do it and who charge a very reasonable fee for it.
Okay, but and you know that fee in advance, and you can have that consultation. My daughter was awarded €7,000, presumably through the court, Seamus. I'm not sure if there's enough information for you to answer. But my daughter was awarded €7,000, is never paid. She was never paid this, and the person who the charge was levelled against has left the country. Have they anywhere to go from here?
Yeah. Well, it's extremely frustrating. If they've been awarded that, it does sound like a matter that has gone before the courts, and there has been a decree to that effect, which is payable. That's unfortunately, and I'm speaking in many ways from dealing with situations over many years, is really only as good as the party against whom you have it. Because if it's not a situation where there's an insurance company indemnifying that party, you then have to go and pursue it, and potentially through the courts again by way of what's called enforcement proceedings. There's the added complication here where they've said that this individual is abroad, may never be coming back. And then you might have to try to enforce a judgment abroad, which again will add further to costs. And keep this in mind as you're going along, that the decree or the award is 7,000. You could very easily spend significant sums of money in the pursuit of that. And at some stage, you're probably going to have to come to a decision. Is it good money after bad? If there's not an indemnifier there, if there's a situation where that there's a property maybe owned by that individual here, even though that person is abroad, they could take up, they could issue proceedings for what's called well-charging proceedings and register it against the property as a mortgage and then push for a sale of the property. So that's further down the line, again, incurring very significant costs. So that's first of all, you have to assess where you're at, what's the likelihood of achieving it, what's the likelihood of getting a result whereby the individual gets their money. And when you move forward from there, if you're comfortable with it, go ahead. If you're not, it could add further to your frustration.
Yeah, indeed. And that means having to swallow some frustration one way or other. Okay. Seamus Gunn of McLaughlin Gunn and Co. They have physical offices in Remelton and Letterkenny. You can contact them for personal consultations, of course. And Seamus, always, as always, 24/7, 365, right across the world, online.
Online, yes, and across the world, becoming ever more appealing, Greg. Gunn.ie, or Donegal Solicitors.ie.
I'd say you get a few Americans stumble onto the website.
Very, very keen Americans, yeah. We love to see them.
Looking for a Colt 64. Anyway.
Yes. Thankfully, there's a time difference.
Okay. Take care of yourself. Thanks very much indeed. Gunn.ie, G-U-N-N.ie. G-U-N-N.ie, should I say. All right, okay. Just before we take a break, just some news coming to me. I mentioned it a couple of times earlier on, and I can bring it to you now because I've got the information. His Holiness Pope Francis has appointed Bishop Alan McGaughian, Bishop of the Diocese of Raphoe, as the new Bishop of the Diocese of Down and Connor. The news of the episcopal appointment has been made public. And that's it, really. There's just a bit of background to Bishop McGaughian, and no word of who might replace him yet. We just don't have that information. But a great deal of information about in this press release that have been handed about Bishop Alan McGaughian, who is going to be the new Bishop of Down and Connor, Catholic Communications Office Archive. Okay. Obviously, we hope we're off Monday, and it's the information is just breaking now. So we're hoping to speak to the Bishop on Tuesday. So that should be an interesting conversation. He's always been very good in terms of making himself available to us, and fingers crossed he'll be able to do so on Tuesday as well, following his new appointment and his departure from this area. It's a big old heave, I would say, for these people. You know, you come into an area and you make connections with the priests, with the congregation, you know, with the media as well, I'm sure. And then you get told, rightio, we need you somewhere else. And on you go. Okay, it must be really, really tough. No, Greg, that's not correct. The case that you quoted, Lawrence Fox couldn't prove that he'd been defamed or lost income as a result of being called a racist. His claims that he lost parts in films were proven to be false by the writers, producers on the production he cited. So this is not who's going to police the left, because the left is always policed. Lawrence Fox is the man who used the N-word in the witness box in the court, by the way. Indeed, he rapped or spoke some words from a Tupac Shakur track, believe it or not. So please stop this both sides stuff. Listen, we have to have conversations, and having that means that you can text in and have your point of view as well, which I think is quite important. And keep those calls and comments coming in as well, by the way, 086 60 25,000. Okay, it's been a busy week, as always. We've covered all the big issues of the week and continue to do so. But it's now Friday as we head towards 11 o'clock, and we park that to one side for the time being and just talk about a lot of stuff that we talk about in our homes or in the office or the lunchroom, wherever it might be. We want to know what you're doing to entertain yourself over the bank holiday weekend. Have you anything nice planned? What are you going doing? Going visiting? Just chilling? Are you going to watch your favourite TV show? Have you got a film or a show lined up? Anything that you want to talk about to do with just chilling out, relaxing, watching TV, listening to podcasts, going to the cinema, anything. What are you doing this weekend? 086 60 25,000. And we'll be joined by Michael and Katie after these